Right now, Mike, can you help me out here with the caller? I want to get our next guest up. It is Matthew Brodsky, senior fellow at Security Studies Group, senior Middle East analyst at Wikistrat. And he's going to comment. He's going to help us understand the protest and the intention of Mr. Trump's speech on Jerusalem. Mr. Brodsky, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
So at first, when we heard Mr. Trump announce that he felt Jerusalem, he announced officially acknowledging that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, a couple things occurred to me. One was, does that mean it's the end of the peace process, or is this Mr. Trump again taking extreme positions so he can get a negotiation back towards the middle, which is what he's looking for? And in this case, what he'd be looking for would be the Palestinian acknowledgement of the Israeli state. In other words, this now gives him a negotiating point, which is, all right, we'll stop talking about Jerusalem as the capital city if you agree to acknowledge that Israel exists. What do you say to that, Mr. Brodsky?
Well, I think it's somewhere in between. He's not going to retract what he said. That's just not in his nature. But what he did do had a purpose. From his perspective, first of all, there have been multiple attempts in the peace process that have all failed, and they've been trying more or less to do the same thing. And there have been attempts, like real attempts, with actual offers for statehood made in 2000, in 2008, and in 2014. And in each of those cases, according to the U.S. negotiators, the Palestinian response was essentially no, or they just didn't offer a response. So he is trying to find a new way forward. Part of the problem that he has realized is that the Palestinian Authority, the movement, has come to realize that, A, it does not want to compromise with some of its mythology, and, B, that time is on its side, so that it's decided that it is better to avoid negotiations directly with Israel and instead to go to the International Criminal Court to try to get to get recognized by UNESCO or other UN organizations, and to basically, through lawfare, get all the trappings of statehood without grappling with reality, without dealing with the fact that they can't get everything that they want in negotiations. What Trump did by declaring that Jerusalem is Israeli is essentially declaring that the world is round. I mean, Israel knows that that's his capital. But what he was careful to do is in the latter half is to say that this does not actually prejudge the outcome of negotiations, because this is part of the mythology that no one has been reporting on right now, because no one really quite understands. When it comes to Jerusalem, there are many Jerusalems. Its municipal boundaries are about 50 miles. The holy city, which is the crux of the issue, really, that's about 4/10 of a mile. Western Jerusalem is where Israel has had its capital, it's had its land since 1947, since 1948 when it declared independence. So that was long before 1967, the war where Israel ended up with the West Bank and Jerusalem expanded. Trump is essentially saying, I'm recognizing the existing capital in Western Jerusalem, and if Palestinians would like to negotiate for a portion of Jerusalem in the end state, then fine, go ahead and you can do that if that's what you both decide. No one's really discussed that part, but this has just led to this complete overreaction all over the place, really, in the world and in the media, that's just ignoring the distinction here.
Well, I saw a former ambassador talking on CNN where he said, yeah, when I wanted to speak to somebody in the Capitol, I left Tel Aviv and went to Jerusalem because that's where the Capitol was. And even though I was, you know, my official embassy was over here, everyone knew the Capitol was in Jerusalem.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, American politicians go there and that's where they speak, that's where they conduct business. And Tel Aviv is where the U.S. ended up setting up the embassy. I mean, again, this is just some history context that people should be aware of, but in 1947, when the land was partitioned for a Jewish state and a Palestinian or an Arab state, the Jewish side accepted it, and the Arab side ended up attacking the Jerusalem area. The Jerusalem and Bethlehem was supposed to be an international zone, so no state was going to have it. But after the war was over, Jordan ended up with the old city, and that whole idea went by the wayside. That's when the U.S. ended up adopting a position that said, okay, well, in the negotiations, at some point, you guys will all figure it out. In the meantime, we're not really going to take a position on it. We'll put our embassy in Tel Aviv, and a lot of the world ended up following that. But again, where we are right here is there's a difference between plopping, say, an embassy in the middle of the Temple Mount, which no one would do, you know, in that four-tenths of a mile, which is the old city, or what is Western Jerusalem, or say what is considered Eastern Jerusalem, the part that Jordan expanded of Jerusalem between 1949 and 1967. These are all distinctions, but those who really would like to just have, you know, their happy day of raids in the Middle East, of course, aren't going to mention that, and this is what they're going to say. You know, they're trying to stoke these passions, basically. Most interesting will be what Trump decides to do with the embassy, because, of course, this will take time. I mean, obviously, I lived in Tel Aviv for 4 years. It's a pain to suddenly have to go from working in Tel Aviv to drive to Jerusalem every day. Where they're going to put the embassy will tell you a lot about what the president is thinking. For instance, does he put that embassy in the 15 miles I'm talking about of West Jerusalem that has always been under Israeli control since before 1967? Or is he going to put it in East Jerusalem, where Jordan had control before? You'll be able to see what he's doing. And one last interesting point is that the U.S. actually does maintain a consulate in Jerusalem, but it's in Eastern Jerusalem, and it only deals with Palestinians, and specifically not with Israelis. So from Trump's perspective, too, this kind of addresses an imbalance that has long existed in American policy. And again, it does not prejudge anything in the future.
I've got a million questions
now.
We're speaking to Matthew Brodsky, Senior Fellow at Security Studies Group and Senior Middle East Analyst at Wikistrat. You mentioned early on in what you were describing as the circumstance around Jerusalem, a mythology around the Palestinian leadership. You didn't define what that was. What does that mean?
Okay, that means that at this point, so both sides have obviously wanted 100% of everything they've wanted, right? Obviously. Okay, so say you start with the Israelis saying, okay, there's no Palestinians, there shouldn't be a state, and then they end up through different negotiating processes coming to the realization that, okay, wait, these are our red lines. Horrible decisions that they had to decide, thinking, coming from a perspective of why should I give them anything? They are the aggressors. But they had to grapple with this. And of course, there are those who haven't in Israeli society. There are super religious people who say, no, nothing at all should be given to them ever. But on the Palestinian side, they have not parted with any of the 100% demand. When they say Jerusalem, if they're actually saying, no, what we have a problem with here is you declaring the Israeli capital is in that Western Jerusalem area, that 15 miles, then what they're saying is that this isn't an issue. We're not having a debate about territories that were captured by Israel in 1967 that we want for a state. They're saying, we do not want Israel to exist. You can't have even the territory you had before because you decided to call it West Jerusalem. Therefore, we consider it to be this Jerusalem concept of which you are not entitled to. This also has to do with when it comes to the refugee issue. This is a huge sticking point that remains in all the past peace processes here, is that there are between 4.5 to 6 million, even more, Palestinian refugees and their descendants. And it's only in this conflict are the descendants counted as refugees officially recognized by a specific UN agency. They are supposed to be, according to this mythology, that they would be allowed to return to Israel itself, not just the Palestinian state, but to Israel. Now, that's around 6 million. Israel itself is about 7 million people right now. Okay, that is a demographic time bomb. But they actually still believe in this. And according to American negotiators who've been through this process through the 90s and 2000, you would actually see, when you look at all the sides, them arguing amongst themselves, don't you think that this is just the position they're going to relinquish, you know, in the end game, that they're just posturing? But then you listen to Mahmoud Abbas or Abu Mazen, the leader today, who back then he was addressing the Palestinian National Council after in 2000, and he was saying, no, this is what we want. We demand this, and then we're going to go to court. He actually wrote an op-ed in 2011 in the New York Times where he said that he was going to do all this lawfare thing. So basically, he wants to get as much as he can from Israel and then sue them in the international courts, which are hostile to Israel to begin with. All of this by protecting the mythology that he doesn't have to level with his people and say, you know what? We're going to have to compromise. And this is something that the Saudi crown prince, Ben Sultan, he understood. Literally in 2000, after Camp David failed, a few months passed, and then Clinton released his parameters, Ben Sultan picked up Arafat at the airport to drive him to meet Clinton in the White House and said to him, look, every time that we've said no, there ends up being, we end up being offered less and less, and then we keep asking again, isn't it time we said yes? The Clinton administration at that point actually had the support of the Arab world, and still Arafat said no. He couldn't, at that point, deal with the mythology or deal with the fact that because of that mythology, the anger that would be created because he would be betraying the Palestinian principles that he had so long said in Arabic. Trump's approach, from everything that I have understood, is to do an outside-in approach where he's starting with the Arab world and trying to get their support so that they will put pressure on Palestinians to grapple with this mythology and to come to the table and negotiate a settlement, because that way really is not the way that's been tried yet. And at the same time, the Middle East is dealing with a Iranian expansion, and they're in pursuit of nuclear weapons, which has drawn Israel together to Saudi Arabia and other Sunni states. So they have, literally, when they look at the issue of Palestinian statehood and Iran getting a nuclear weapon, they think to themselves, Iran getting a nuclear weapon and their current expansion in Iraq, in Syria, all around them, that is their priority. In which case, they still are going to be operating with Israel, which is a new reality that had not existed beforehand. So it actually bodes well for the future, you know, whether this move works out. It's just, unfortunately, in the news today, and I've been on many international news programs in the past 24 hours, where literally the lack of understanding is when it comes to just the issue of Jerusalem and what they're even talking about, it's quite massive. So it perpetuates this snowball effect as it rolls downhill. And it's just like, oh, so Trump basically pounded his chest and said weird things just for the heck of it. And now the entire world is lighting their coach on fire. I mean, that's not actually what happened in this case, even though Trump does say outrageous things.
Yeah. Well, I listen. I hope you will continue to stay in contact with us, because I'm fascinated by what you're saying. I could listen to another hour lecture, I think, on the specifics of this and how things might play out going forward. But they will play out as they play out, and I will look forward to your commentary. And I hope you will join us again soon. Is there a website people can go if they'd like to read more of your material or keep abreast of this?
Sure. Matthew R.J. Brodsky is my website, Brodsky. And on Twitter, it's at R.J. Brodsky. And you can find me there.
I'm happy to join you anytime. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate your time.
Appreciate it. 800-222-5222 is our phone number. It's Midday Live. To give your thoughts on this, Talk Radio 790 KBC.